April 2012, my wife and I took a trip to Salt Lake City together for the first time. How many of you moved into Salt Lake City from somewhere else? Would you raise your hands? Okay. A lot of transplants in the room this morning. Okay. I remember when I moved into Salt Lake City. I remember my first visits into the city too. I really wanted to know my way around. Any tourists that try to act like locals in the room? Is anybody else like that? Okay, yeah. Anytime I go somewhere, I'm on Yelp. I'm trying to find the way around. I want to act like a local in that experience so that, you know, I don't draw too much attention, so I can get the kind of backdoor access to the cool stuff in the city. I remember coming to Salt Lake City, and for some reason, it took me a very, very long time to find my way around places. Okay, I came from like a small town, 20,000 people in Tennessee, and all the roads went like this. Okay, and so I just figured when you got directions in Salt Lake City, it was the same as in Tennessee. You know, well, you just kind of go around that bend down there. You'll see a little cut-off tree. There's a half mailbox. Keep going, 345 feet. There's a gravel dirt road. That's not it. Go a little further down it. Turn in on the grass. It's fine. That's what we use for our driveway. That's my house, okay? And I was expecting these kind of directions, right? The turn by turn. You go here, you turn right. You go here, you turn left. Make sure you look for this. You'll find this. When you see this, you're on the right track. Keep going a little further. Aha, end destination. Any locals laughing at me right now? Okay. Is that how life in Salt Lake City works? No, it's definitely not how life in Salt Lake City works. You know what I discovered? Discovered this beautiful thing called the grid system, right? It's beautiful, right? I remember being in New York City and they had a grid system. And I remember how I tried to figure it out. And even with all of the huge skyscrapers, right? I just knew one more block, I could turn here, and I could get to where I needed to go. Sometimes we treat change in the Christian life, and we treat our Bibles as the roadmap to change, like those turn-by-turn directions, don't we? I know what I want. I know where I want to get to go. I want my marriage to be better than it is right now. I want to be a better mom or a better dad than I am right now. I want to be able to figure out how to make work work. And so we open the Bible and we're like, okay, I'm going to find turn by turns. I'm going to find the right, the left. I'm going to find that little stump that's gotten cut off that I'm going to be able to see so that I can go past it and then turn in and I'll be okay. And how many times have we been frustrated by those kind of directions, hoping for them, and yet they don't seem to work for us? Do you know why they don't work? Because along the way to reach the destination of our good marriage, we hit this little problem called parenting, don't we? It's like a massive traffic jam. Maybe an accident on the road. I don't know. Okay? But we nail it. And we're like, oh no, where do I go now? And all of a sudden, weather kicks up, and there's some turbulence of some financial difficulty, and we're trying to get to this destination, and yet all of a sudden, now we feel lost and discouraged because it's all happening all at once. Do you know what God gives us in the Word? Throughout this book, He doesn't just give us turn right, turn left, and then you'll get to your destination. He gives us the overview. He gives us the grid view of our change process. And that whole grid view, it involves understanding who He is. It involves understanding who we are. And it involves understanding how to get to the end destination. And so what I want us to do in these next 4 weeks is I want us to look at that overview. Because in the Bible, here's what we find. We find that grid with how things work together, even when there's fog and even when there's a new obstacle. We find relationship with the one who sees it all and has always seen it all and will always see it all at once. I mean, this is better than knowing a local. This is the one who made it all. And in the Bible, we find that we can have relationship with Him, and that is the only way to understand change. And then we're able to see this aerial view that motivates us. It pulls us along. It gives us hope whenever there is a jam in front of us. It gives us a little bit of light in the midst of a dark, dark journey to be able to take that next step. So that's what we're going to do together. We're going to find hope in the midst of the change process by seeing God's view of the situation. And there's three things we need to see. Okay, we're going to look at three things this morning as we see God's view on the situation. And the first thing is this. The first thing that we have to do in order to make it through this process called change is that we have to remember our destination. We have to remember our destination. Okay, so this is key, all right? Where are we even going? I'm visiting Salt Lake City, and I know that I want to go to the Park Cafe because I've got it on Yelp. It's at the top of the list, right? How do I get there? At the Park Cafe, I hear you sit down, and everything on the menu is not just delicious, it's also inexpensive. And it's where all the locals eat, so I want to get there, right? So how do I get there? Well, that's the question. So in the Christian life, what we have to remember is, what is the destination? Where are we going? And I think this is all encapsulated in this beautiful phrase at the end of the Lord's Prayer. When Jesus teaches us how to pray, when Jesus shows us the kind of prayer that he wants to answer, okay, when Jesus teaches us how to pray, he's teaching us to ask things that he wants to answer. I don't know if you realize that, but that's how prayer works, right? When God is all-powerful, says to pray, and he says, this is how I want you to pray, he's saying, this is how I want to answer your prayer. And even just that thought might be helpful for the whole change process, right? But that little phrase is this. It's in Matthew chapter 6, verse 13. Deliver us from evil. What is the destination of change? It's deliverance from evil. Deliverance from evil in all of its forms. The evil that comes from our greatest enemy, death itself, yes, but deliverance from our spiritual enemy, Satan himself. Deliverance from human enemies, the ones that we know about, and the ones that are just around the corner or just behind our back, ready to stab us. Deliverance from all of the enemies that surround us in our culture. Deliver us from the evil lies that we just swim in. I mean, have you ever thought about the fact that we swim in a world of evil? It's like the air we breathe is constantly polluted with toxins and we breathe it in. Forget God. This is more important than Jesus. You're too busy to spend time with him. You don't need him. Pull yourself up by your own strength. I mean, is that not the language that's spoken in the world around us? Like, one example of that. Weather reports. Okay, nothing is benign in our world, right? I mean, like, turn on the weather. You turn on the weather, and all of a sudden, this kind gentleman is sharing with you the update for the day. We'll have you know that in the Lord's world today, he has ordained a perfect storm to come in at this time. We're looking by faith to him to provide us some rain on the crops. And that will give us some food to eat, cool breeze because he loves us. Sun will shine because that's what he does. The rain will come because he does that on the sinners and the saints. That's exactly the kind of weather report you know. Okay, what does it tell us? It tells us that actually all the forces around us are just because of pressure changes. And we have this inversion because there's cold pressure and there's low pressure and high pressure and we can't breathe. Right? And this hurricane has created this problem, and just watch on the map. All of these things are working together because we have it figured out, and it's life without God. I mean, deliver us from the evil of a constantly pressuring world that tells us that there's no God, and you don't need him, and that the relationship that you need to have with him is unimportant. Deliver us from evil. Deliver us from the evil within ourselves, like personal evil. We don't just do sin. Like, sin isn't just a list of rules that we break and keep. Sin is within us. Sin is madness in our souls, the book of Ecclesiastes talks about. We are stained by sin. deliver us from evil in all its forms. That is the destination of the Christian. What does that look like for me and you, to be delivered from evil? What does it look like? For just a moment, I want you to think about it with me. What is God's final destination for the Christian in delivering them from evil in all of its forms? The first thing I want you to see is that you will be fully alive forever. Strong and healthy forever. Both nostrils working forever. Oh, it's a good day. Could both sides are working today, you know? That's great. Feeling clear. That's trite. But go much deeper. Okay? The end of God's goal for your life is that you would triumph in life forever. It's not that that life would somehow kick you down and you'd feel the sickness and weight of life, but that you would actually triumph in life. That is God's goal for you. No more dying there, Revelation 21 tells us. No more sickness, no more sadness, no more death, because life will triumph forever. That's the end destination. What else? Your next blank on your sheet. You will be, what's that word? Fearless. Some of you are afraid to even say it. Is he on the right slide? I don't know. You will be, say it together. Fearless. You'll be fearless. And would you just think how much of your life is slogging through the milieu of your fears? Oh, I wonder, how am I going to do on this project? I wonder, how am I going to do when I stand up here and try to teach these people change principles? How am I going to do? Financial fears, like, where is the money going to come from? Like, health fears. What are we going to find out when we go to the doctor at this appointment? He looked a little bit concerned. And then just for a moment, like, no more fears of awkwardness, okay? Right? No more social fears, right? I mean, that is a wonderful picture, first of all. But within my soul, I feel that way a lot of times. Does anyone else just feel like you are constantly trapped in seventh grade, okay? Constantly just trapped. Trying to act like you're not, like, don't have those glasses anymore, but that's still inside, right? We feel it in conversations when we don't know what to say next. We feel it whenever there's like a greeting time, you know, like work, you're going to have a mixer. Let's have a mixer. Remember, we stand up and let's mix it up a little bit. And you're like, oh no, what if nobody talks to me? What if I say something really stupid, right? No more wondering about people's opinions of you. No more wondering if you have any real friends in the world. No more feeling intimidated by someone else. No more comparing yourself to someone else and feeling the pride or the envy. No more struggling to relate to someone that you feel better than or worse than. In fact, absolutely everyone seen eye to eye on the same plane. Rich, poor, pretty, plain. You know, put all those differences that we talked about a few weeks ago from John chapter 13 on there. And all of it will be seen eye to eye because we will be fearless. When you think about fear, it's like darkness, isn't it? It's like you feel alone, you feel closed in, you feel clogged. And just a little bit of light can give you hope. And suddenly, you could see, like, okay, I remember the destination. I see the light flickering, that little bit of fearlessness, and I want to take another step. I want to see that next turn around the corner where God is leading, right? So remember your destination. You'll be fearless. You will no longer face sorrow or loss. Just went to a funeral of my grandma, and was reminded of everything that she was. Yeah, the stuff she did too, like the popcorn balls and Christmas presents and all that, but who she was, her sweetness, her sacrificial spirit, it's gone. It's not on the earth anymore. Loss, right? God's final destination for us is no more sorrow, no more loss, no more tears, no more pain. Not only that, you will be blessed. You will be blessed. The Bible talks about the end destination. In God's presence, there is this overwhelming, abundant joy. Our hearts are glad in him. God's people feast on the abundance of your house, and you give them drink from the river of your delights. For with you is the fountain of life, and in your light do we see light. Blessed, happy, radiantly unequivocated happiness. No, like, asterisk. Happy. Happy. Right? Quote, unquote, happy. Yeah, I'm really happy. Don't let me start thinking about all the troubles. Don't let me think about my kids. Don't let me think about work. Don't let me think about my relationships. But right now, I'm happy. You will be blessed. That's the final destination for the Christian. That's where you're going. Deliver us from evil, Lord. Oh, I can't wait until the day when our hearts are always glad in him. I don't know about you. Not only that, you will be beautiful. Beautiful. Maybe hard to imagine at this moment in your life. Beautiful. Maybe hard to imagine for the person sitting next to you. I don't know. Okay. You will be beautiful. Oh, that we would understand what it means for the sons of God to be revealed in glory. All creation is groaning for that day when the glory of the sons of God will be revealed, right? Wow. All creation and all of its majesty and glory is waiting for the day when you will be made beautiful because of the all-surpassing, glorifying work of Jesus Christ in your life. Wow. You will be beautiful. Think about how many problems are attached to this. I wish I looked a certain way. I don't like this about me. You look in the mirror and you see yourself, but not only yourself, you see this like dotted outline of what you wish you were like. And life is constantly either inside those lines or outside those lines, and we're never really happy. You will be beautiful because of the final work of Jesus Christ. But not only that, oh, you know what? This is good. C.S. Lewis, he's got this quote. He's talking about the glory of the sons of God being revealed. He says this: the dullest and most uninteresting person among us may one day be a creature which, if you saw it now, you would be strongly tempted to worship. Whoa. That big of a difference between what is happening right now and the work of God that will happen someday. It's not that we will worship because the one who is all worthy of worship will be there, but the difference between that and today, startling, stunning, splendid. You will be a truly good person. Truly good. Good. Not like goody two-shoes, you know? Like, that's how we think of good today. We're kind of like suspicious of good. Not like, you know, kind of plastic Pollyanna. Like, something about them. Like, they're hiding something, right? We see somebody that's good and we're like, all is not as it seems, I'm sure, right? I mean, we see this in movies too, right? That good character, you know, the person that just seems really sweet and kind and generous, you're like, just wait. Just wait till act two. He's coming out with the axe, right? We have that suspicion. Like, we have trouble with truly good people. We would have never come up with the character Jesus Christ, would we? Free from all ulterior motives, kind, gracious, sacrificial, servant-hearted, truly good, and the Bible tells us that we will be like him when we see him. That's your last blank. You will be like Jesus when you see him. Evil causes us to turn in on ourselves. It creates this dark closet. The more and more that we embrace the evil around us, the more and more alone we are, the more dark, the more stuffled, the more in trouble we are. Theologians talk about this like sin curves in on itself. Sin curves in on itself. And it's a dark closet. But oh, my friends, to see the glory of Jesus Christ is to have the door flooded open. to look forward to his work of true good in our lives, where his glory is shared with us and we are truly good like Jesus. Look forward to that day. That is your end destination if you are a child of God. This is important, right? This is very important for us. Because oftentimes in this Christian life, when we get in the middle of that map, when we face some of those difficulties that crowd in and keep us from getting somewhere, we're tempted to lose hope, aren't we? We're tempted to give up. So remember your destination and all that it means for God to deliver you from evil. But not only that, all along the way of getting there, it's very difficult. Anybody agree with that with me? Anybody agree? Okay. So the next thing we need to do is we need to consider our situation. Okay? Because that's what you're about to say. You're like, okay, John, yeah, that's great. That's really good news, but you don't know my situation. Right? And you say it like that. Situation. Because you're feeling it. Because you've been dealing with it for a long time. You don't know my situation, right? So let's talk about that for a second. Because here's the thing. Our situation is what we often look at as the major problem for why we don't get to our destination, isn't it? It's like, I would be that except for this person, right? Or I know I'd be closer to that than I am right now if I didn't have to go through this. If this wasn't happening in my life, I sure would be a lot further along. But actually, that's not the way the Bible describes our situation and our circumstances. You see, when we look at all the stories of the Bible, it sets them all in this situational backdrop that is never blamed for the person's behavior or what happens. It's simply the stage that everything's taking place in. So we have to do the same thing in our life. We actually have to look at our situation, not to look at our situation to blame it and take our hands off and be like, not my fault, but actually to see that that is the world in which we travel through. And in God's path for change, he actually helps us navigate our situation and our circumstances. So let's look at a few of these things that play into how we respond to who God is and who we are. Okay, so let's look at our situation. This is what counselors call our heat. Okay? Our heat. Heat isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's just heat. These are just our circumstances. It's the world we live in. It's the pressures we feel. Let me hear a few of these things that might come to your mind when you think about the situations that we're in. What do you think? What would be some of the things that would play into heat in our lives? Pressure. Not everybody all at once. Don't overwhelm me or anything. Wow. Okay, people, all right? Relationships. Okay, what else? What's that? Your job, okay? Yeah. I mean, let's just lump all of like job, financial, sickness, difficulty, all of that into this one big category called life's troubles, okay? You're like, whoa, we have seven more after this? Yeah, we do. Like, I mean, this is just like the outer struggles with people in general. It's the inner struggles with like allergies or continual sickness or our own bent towards certain sin struggles, life's troubles. What about when we get sinned against, though? Yeah, that's another level, right? It's one thing to deal with people, even kind people. It's another thing when they hurt us, right? When we feel wronged by others. That's heat in our lives, right? Feels like a knife edge, harsh words, betrayal, right? Suddenly that's pressure in our lives. It doesn't force us to do anything, but it is a situation we live in. What else? What else might be a trouble or a pressure or a circumstance that we face? Is there an enemy that walks about like a roaring lion? Yeah. Satan's attacks, right? I mean, the attacks of the enemy. He is not passive. He is looking to devour and bite us. He's looking to oppress us and tempt us. He's looking to waylay us. Yeah, Satan's attacks. What else? Envy. Yeah, Yeah, actually that one fits in this one right here. Like the sins and sufferings of others or the positive things that happens to others, right? So how we navigate what happens in other people's lives is a real determiner of how we're going to change. So it has nothing to do with you, does it? I mean, they're just over there living their life. They're doing great or they're doing poorly. It doesn't reach out and touch you. It's like the man who got overtaken on the road where the Samaritan comes and meets him, right? He's not the Samaritan man. He's just a man there, right? He's overtaken by thieves and robbers. You can walk on the other side. You can go a little closer. You can bend down and help. Why does any of that matter to you? But how you respond to that situation is a real determiner on how you'll navigate this life of change that God has for you, whether it be good things in other people's lives or evil and sin and suffering in their life. One more, your own blessings. Your own blessings. How do you handle the good things that God does in your life? How do you navigate that? Did you know it's pressure? Did you know it's pressure? I mean, you're like, I would take a little bit of that pressure. Oh, you're giving out pressure? I'll take some of that right there. I'll take some of that blessings pressure. Let me just try it, right? I mean, I've heard it's really difficult to navigate just getting a $10,000 check from somebody that you don't know, like really hard. I'd like to just try it. Let's see, right? Okay. But you know what? How we navigate the blessings of the Lord is a determiner for how we're going to get in this path of change. Are you suspicious of good from the Lord? You can't even enjoy it because you're like, probably going to go away pretty soon. How do you navigate the blessings? Okay. Those are all things that come at us though. Okay. They're constantly coming at us. Somebody new walks up to us. If you are single and looking for a spouse, somebody comes walking up to you like this. Right? And all of a sudden you have a situation, don't you? The goodness in someone else's life. Or perhaps someone close to you is suffering. How are you going to respond to that? That just comes at you constantly. But there are things that wait for us in the world around us. One of those things is just the endless variety of options and opportunities that we have. Okay? I mean, this is not, it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just a thing. You can get anything you want anytime you want it, can't you? It's just always there. It's a cell phone swipe away, right? I would like to go from here to there. I'm going to push this app and a car is magically going to come for me and I will get into it and they will take me to my destination and I will feel like a king, okay? Endless options and opportunities right in front of us. Not necessarily bad things, but some of them are. It's just how we navigate those pressures. Human differences. They're just waiting for us. I mean, look around this room. There are people better than you and worse than you all over this room, and that has nothing to do with you. And yet, because of our hearts, we make it about us. Look at them over there, wearing that new outfit, looking all good. Look at them, so confident and strong. I bet they're a louse at home. Like, where did that even come from? It came from our response to the situation that God has us in. Lies of culture, the lies to be something, do something, say something, the lies to pursue something, the lies that this is what life is about, the lies that are constantly tempting us to be or do or say something that would not please God. Here's what life is found in. Here's what life is found in. It's found in this kind of job. It's found in this kind of security. It's found in making these choices on the weekends. And that's just waiting for us, isn't it? I mean, it's like you get up in the morning and you go out of your house and there are a million lies just waiting to pull you away from doing what God wants you to do. Now look at this list of eight. This isn't even all of them. I tried to think through some major categories. This was one of the things that was super helpful in the class that Beth and I took recently, was thinking through these categories of pressure and circumstances in our life. I mean, how many times are we tempted to blame those things for how we're doing spiritually? Anybody? How many times are we in conversation with people and they just seem to be stuck because they're blaming a physical malady, or they're blaming this other person that hurt them, or they can't get past seeing what this person did? Now notice this. This is David Pallison. It's on your sheet. Your situation is always significant. Okay, we're spending time on this because it's always significant. It's the world you live in. But it's not determinative. It's not determinative. It does not determine whether or not you will change. Who determines whether or not you will change? The living God who meets us in our sin and suffering. And to illustrate that, I want to do something very simple, okay? I've got a water bottle up here, right? So within this water bottle, I want you to think of it like it's your heart, right? This is your life. This is your path through change. This is what's inside you. What happens when someone gets angry at you and they say something very painful? Okay, what's it feel like? Probably feels like this, right? Probably does, doesn't it? It probably feels like wow, ouch, that hurts. It creates a mess. I mean, look at this whole row of seats up here. All right, some of you control freaks are like, huh, and you have a situation right now. Okay. But it's painful, isn't it? I mean, just they keep on saying it to you. Now, here's the question. Why is there water on these chairs? It's my fault, isn't it? It's my fault that there's water on these chairs. Now, actually, there's water in these chairs because there's water in this bottle, isn't there? Because had there been gasoline in here, right? Some of you would have been even more upset, right? More fearful. Orange juice, coffee. Does he know that stains? The reason that there's water out here is because there's water in here, right? I mean, think about how the pain and difficulty of others, we focus on this right here. We do not focus on what comes out, do we? The process of change is learning to see what's inside the bottle by observing what happens when we get hit. Yes, this is significant. It hurts. It makes a mess. But what's inside the bottle? Not just that. I mean, just think about the lies of culture. Come on out. Give your heart to this, right? It tempts us. It pulls us. We don't have to listen to it. What is this doing here? There's no magic here. But we go towards it, don't we? What about long-term difficulty that just feels so painful? It's just always squeezing. What does it do to us? It reveals what's inside, right? What if we're really fighting and it seems like everything against us is just pushing down, pushing until finally something comes out? The situation is significant, yes, but it's not determinative. Why? What's determinative is how we respond to it. What's determinative is what's in our heart. What's in your heart? What is there? That's the question that change asks. And that's the question that we're all going to ask as we go through this four-week series. Not just let's sit down for the next 4 hours and talk about your heat. Yes, it's significant, but there's much more to see. Because within that water bottle is something that God can change so that whatever comes, if it's a hit, if it's a squeeze, if it's a push, if it's a pull, if it's even you, the marketplace of varieties, you're like, I think that over there looks good, right? We kind of throw ourselves at it. Whatever it is, we can respond and God can change us so that as we navigate the twists and turns and fog of life, he can do a work. Because here's the thing. Our ultimate situation is not that stuff. Our ultimate situation is the living God. The living God. We exist within his world and we can never get outside of it. We can never escape. We can never run. We can never hide. We can never get lost away from his all-seeing eye. He is an ever-present help in time of need. And where is the best answer to that promise? That he is an ever-present help in time of need. It came when God himself stepped into all of that heat. Look at that heat on your sheet. Jesus Christ lived in that world, didn't he? He navigated the twists and turns of other people's sin. He navigated the lies of the world. He navigated the endless options. He navigated it all, and he did it to offer you the kind of life that you desperately need. Your situation is not outside of the ever-present help in time of trouble of your living God. You're like, but you don't know what I've done. It's still within the realm. Nothing can separate us from the love of God in Christ Jesus. And this is what we must know in order to move forward and change. Three questions and we're done. Orient your heart. These three questions should help us to be able to see where we're going and how we can get there. First one is this. I mean, this is like, this comes out when you look at the situation. How far are you from your destination right now? How many of you are like, I'm kind of close? Nope, right? Nobody. Look around. Ain't nobody raising their hand. I'm lying, okay? Hand down. We are like, I mean, it's like a million miles with croc-infested swamps, and we have to walk barefoot across the Badlands without, like, any kind of water or anything. We don't have a tundra, and we got to hike through the Himalayas. Like, we don't have parka, and we're in trouble. Like, it's no good, right? We're far off. Like, we are a long way from our destination. So we have to ask the next question. Which direction, then, are we facing? Which direction are we facing? Where are we heading? Which direction are we looking towards? Are we looking at that situation and saying, that's it, we get stuck, right? We get stuck, we get lost. The situation is too much. Or are we able to see, like, my eyes are on you, oh God. You are my ultimate hope. There's all kinds of paces in the Christian life depending upon what situation you're facing. Could be that you are in a pace where you're running through the Christian life and it feels like there's wind at your back and you are flying. Other times it feels like you're just walking. Other times you're having to pick up your legs, but at least you're standing. Other times you're crawling. Other times you've fallen flat on your face. Where are you looking? Where are you looking? Because all of those situations are spelled out in the Bible for us, throughout the book of Psalms especially. There are even some psalms that the psalmist is flat on his face the whole time, but his eyes are on the Lord. Which direction are you facing? And the last thing is this, what is your hope? Where is your ultimate hope? The beauty of the Bible is that it shows us a God that changes us, not for our sakes only, but for his sake. God promises to change us for his name's sake. He has committed to us such that there is an unshakable foundation of hope for us because he wants to show you mercy for his name's sake. He wants to do good in your life for his name's sake. He wants to bring you to the ultimate destination for his name's sake.